Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 16th. Jim, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear clicking, popping, and scratching?
I know all those guys. Especially popping from the 70s. I remember that dude.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. So with me is Jim Allen on a Sunday morning. And again, just apologies for last week's sound quality on my end.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I guess microphones break all of a sudden. They don't give you any warning or anything. They're like, excuse me, hey, I'm not feeling well. Can I get a change here? Can somebody sub me out? No, they don't tell you that. So
in Japan, they don't. They just come to work and are miserable.
Yeah, I know those guys too. It wasn't until the show was done that I found out that the mic was not working right, so it was too late to re-record it. So I did everything I could to be heard at all, and we'll chalk that one up to experience. But got a new mic on Thursday, and I tested. It tested well. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to start it this week.
Well, I was
going to
say, indeed.
So anyway, on this week's show, we're going to feature Nick Martinez of the Nippon Ham Fighters. A discussion with him. We're going to talk about highlights from both leagues and some high heat. We're packed. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. Well, I had the good fortune to talk to Nick Martinez the other day after Nick had opened his account with a complete game victory for the Nippon Ham Fighters. And just to refresh people's memory, in our PL prediction show, I was tasked with talking about the Nippon Ham Fighters, and one of the things that occurred to me was how young the guys they got were.
Right.
This year. And Nick Martinez is really an unusual guy to be showing up in NPB because he's in his mid-20s, and he's already had a fairly substantial body of work in the major leagues. So that was the kind of the question, you know, like what the heck are you doing here? And, you know, does somebody like play a prank on you in spring training and you ended up in, they gave you directions and you ended up in Sapporo?
Don't get us wrong. We're very glad to see you here, but hey, are you lost?
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't quite like that, but it was a case of, you know, what's going on, and he had some things to say about this and that, and it was kind of fun, and let's have a listen to what he has to say.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast is Nippon Ham Fighters, the first-year import, Nick Martinez. Thank you for being on our show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, it's our pleasure, and congratulations. Complete game win in your first game. That's pretty outstanding.
Yeah, it was great. I got to attribute that to our catchers, our preparation, and our defense and our offense early support.
Okay, yeah, obviously, when you first walk in the door, you've got to be thinking, you know, to the catchers, you know, get me through this. I mean, how much of that is, do you understand going into the game about the hitters you're facing?
Yeah.
And how much are you relying on their expertise and working with the pitches?
You know, you have to trust them a whole lot because you're coming into a league where you don't know anybody. You don't know. You're still getting used to their style of play.
And, right.
Obviously, I've had spring training to learn that, but even that was a learning process. And I've been paired my last two games with Suroka, who's been in the league for 13 years now. Yeah. So he's a veteran, and he understands these hitters maybe better than anyone. So putting my trust in him is definitely what's going to help me come out on top in most of these games.
Okay, now it's kind of interesting, as I said before, that your profile is you've had a lot of experience in the majors, but coming to Japan at a very young age. So what was the decision that brought you to Japan after a good start as a very useful major league pitcher?
Yeah, I think it was a good opportunity at the right time where I could make some strides in my career for some personal growth and better my craft. On the field and just mature, with preparation and kind of just fine-tune my arsenal and It was just, again, it was just a great opportunity at the right time.
Now, obviously, you've seen with the Rangers, you've seen guys coming from Japan and also guys who've left for Japan and do quite well here. And you know, and I don't know if it was on your radar screen when you saw Miles Michaelis get that very nice deal with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, you know, I played with Miles in 2014, and I've also I played with Kobe Lewis, who came here and went back, and Tony Barnett, and those guys played an intricate part in making that decision for me to come over here. And I talked to those guys a lot, and you know, asked them about the you know, the competition, the way of life, and how to prepare, and you know, if it's the, and I talked to Kobe because he's now kind of doing like special assistant with the,
right.
And he you know, he played major leagues for a long time,
sure.
And came, so he's got a lot of wisdom. So I talked to him about you know, if it's the right career move for me, if coming over here will make me better, and he's like, absolutely, no doubt about it. And it was just a great opportunity.
Mm. Well, those two you mentioned, Tony and Colby, are two of the smart. I mean, I don't want to say two of the smarter guys, but they're definitely one of those smart guys who play baseball here,
yeah.
And really, you know, learned and have made the most of their careers here. So
yeah.
Now, tell me about the pitches you throw. I did not watch your game last
That's
night
all right.
because I was doing a different game. And
I have a four-seam, sinker, curveball, changeup, cutter.
Okay, now let me ask, how's the sinker going here in Japan?
It's going well. You just got to use it at the right time, because sometimes it can help, it can favor their swings, and other times it plays really well.
Okay.
As a pitcher, so again, that's when we revert to the scouting report and
right.
go over the game plan and decide when to use it.
Now, and the reason I ask is because I had a big revelation about 6 months ago or 4 months ago when the Japanese pitchers who played in the majors, almost nobody throws a two-seamer
mm-hmm.
in Japan.
Right.
And the reason they tell me is because not your mound is Sapporo Dome, but a lot of the mounds, particularly in the Central League,
mm-hmm.
tend to be a little softer and lower.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that the balls tend to flatten out.
Mm-hmm.
And also the ball's a little lighter.
Right.
And
right.
It doesn't have as much run to it. So
right.
It really gives it a different flavor than it
yeah.
has in the majors. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the sinker here doesn't move as much as it does in the majors.
Right.
But I think the baseball here, it helps with your curveball and your
mm-hmm.
cutter.
Sure.
So, you know, it has its pros and cons. So,
okay.
It just, again, you just got to look at the scouting report and decide when to use it and when not to use it. But at times, a four-seamer is better than the sinker and vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, one of my I just would ask is, obviously, how well you command a pitch is often a product of how often, how much you practice and how much you believe in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, what kind of feel you have for it.
Right, right.
So a lot of the guys here, you know, the sinker is just a pitch that they're not going to get any traction with unless
yeah.
they really, really work at it.
Right,
and it's
right.
kind of a... like a not a, an effective use of their time,
right, right.
But I think some of the guys coming over here, they can make it work enough.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a big pitch back in the States, so
right.
a lot of guys spend a lot of time working on it, and come in here when you make that slight adjustment, but since you've thrown it long enough, you're able to, you know, make those little adjustments
right.
and able to use it to your advantage.
So getting used, particularly the ball, I think.
Right,
and
right,
then,
right.
And because the mounds here are more different than they are in the States.
Yeah, that too. As far as the softer mounds, you got to kind of just find your way to find a tough spot in the mound
right.
so that you can have a sturdy landing, and that way, you know, it might flatten out a little bit, but as long as the landing's sturdy, then
mm-hmm.
you can find a way to get on top of your pitches and have that downward movement.
Okay, now, you mentioned, you know, building yourself as a pitcher. What kind of a contract did you come here on? 2 years or 1 year?
A 1 year with a mutual option.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got lots of time ahead of you to,
yeah.
you know, polish your stuff, and obviously you've seen the kind of adjustments people have made here. You know, it's really hard to make the adjustments you make here in the States.
Yeah.
Because different kinds, a little different kind of style of hitting.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you got to come open-minded to, you know, you're coming over here, I think, for a foreigner, when you come over here, you're coming over here to better yourself. And,
right.
And I think at times it's okay to be stubborn in your ways, but you really should come over here open-minded and looking for ways to get better. And sometimes you have to change and find different ways, right?
That's a challenge, and I'll tell you, that's a
right.
challenge for even the most open-minded people
right.
because at the level you're playing at, you have to have so much confidence in your
right.
ability
right.
and what you've done so far and what you're capable of that when you come here and you go like, huh? Give me a break.
Right.
It's human nature.
Right, right. Yeah, it is a challenge, but as long as you're up for the challenge, I'm sure you can come out on top.
Well, people have, and we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully, you know, another few complete games before the end of the season.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
All right. Well, congratulations on that.
And
our pleasure. I hope to talk to you again.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Martinez. It was a pleasure, and I have a, you know, looking forward to the next time we can talk, John.
Yeah. There's sometimes I feel like you and I share a brain, because I saw Nick Martinez pitch in his first game, and just the way he went off the field and interacted with his catchers and with the guys on the bench, I thought, man, this guy, I want to talk to this guy right away. You know, I just, because he's a newcomer to Japan anyway, so I thought, man, I got to talk to this guy as soon as I can. He just seemed full of life, really focused, very energetic. And then, you know, you told me you were at Tokyo Dome and that you were talking to Nick Martinez, and I'm like, man, you know, how did you know that I was feeling? And this was unsolicited or unplanned, I should say. And
yeah, I would just showed up at Tokyo Dome. I didn't know I would be able to go because of my NPB pass didn't arrive till this past week. So yeah, it was random.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously he's here to learn, and he stopped himself short in the chat of saying, "Hey, I'm just here to absorb what I can and then get back to the big leagues." He didn't say that, but he did say that in a few words.
He didn't mean that.
No. I'm not saying that he's here to, you know, get what he can and become like a mini star and then. Take the lessons he learned and turn them into big bucks back in the States. I don't think that that's what he's thinking. When he talked about the fact that he had, this is another pitcher with Texas Rangers connections, right?
Sure.
And we've had quite a few in the past. The latest guy to come here and then have some success and then go back, and he's pitching with the St. Louis Cardinals, is Miles Michaelis. But, you could hear that, you know, he's here to, like I said, he just stopped short of saying it, but you could tell that that's what his mindset is. Here, I want to learn, I want to get better, and then get back to the big leagues as soon as possible. And, you know, I think he's got a great contract with the Fighters with the mutual option for that second year, but I hope he stays for the second year, because, quite frankly, the first year goes by so quickly, and you have so much trouble trying to figure out what's actual and what's fake and what's difficult to, you know, the whole process of pitching. It just goes by so fast. We talked to Trey Hillman before, and he just spoke of how quickly that first year goes by for guys. So I'd like to see him stay for that second year. And obviously Nick Martinez said he's talking to his catcher, Shinya Tsuruoka,
yeah.
And I loved hearing about him finding a way to land different on the mounds, you know, because you've got to adjust. And we take it for granted. We just see a guy throwing and we decide, oh, okay, he's good or he's bad, just based on the results. But you hear him talk about landing on the mound, and obviously that's really important, and how he needs to finish on top of his pitches. But you start thinking about how different all these mounds are. Across Japan, and then sometimes they play in these regional stadiums where the foreign players are just unfamiliar. They're just, you know, especially first year guys, they're very unfamiliar. Okay. And even if a guy's been there before, maybe a reliever, maybe he didn't pitch, or you know, if he did pitch, maybe he only faced one batter or something. So it's just very unfamiliar territory. So I'd like to see him come back that second year and you know, give it another shot and put up, actually, you know, you put up good results for 1 year. You don't know if people think that that's actual or, you know, just a lucky year. So you do it twice, you do it 2 years, especially in Japan. I think it says a little bit more, or it just fills out your resume, adds a little bit of depth to your resume.
It's funny that you mentioned that, putting up numbers 2 years in a row. Cause I remember one pitcher who basically had a wonderful first season, you know, led the league in ERA. And then he had another season, which was essentially identical. And the second year, they said, oh, you really developed this year. We're going to give you the Sawamura Award.
Uh-huh.
But the 2 years were indistinguishable. it's like what did you see this year that you didn't see last year, you know? So there's that, but there's also the fact that, you know, you can come and you can learn,
right?
And there are people who can learn, and I think you do learn the bulk of the things you need to learn in the first year, but there's always more you can learn in the second. And this is where that there's a pitfall in there. I don't mean a pitfall as in a bad thing that can happen to you, but
no, the good pitfalls.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a pitfall is perhaps not the best word to use, but a detour in your plan,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you're going to go and you're going to be one and done, perhaps. You're going to learn as much as you can in 1 year. And I think, to be fair, he wasn't saying, I'm going to learn everything I can from Japan and get my, you know, and get out of Dodge as soon as possible. I think, to put it in perhaps a more objective, step back from that, it was more like, I'm going to learn as much as I can to be as good as a pitcher as I can, and then take it from there.
Okay.
And I think that's really the interesting thing. The other thing is, the idea that the Texas Rangers are kind of becoming Japan's farm team.
Yeah.
You know, we've got, you know, Colby Lewis. Well, Colby Lewis was quite a while ago, but, you know, Miles Michaelis, Aaron Pareda, this two guy, Tanner Shepherds is here this year, a whole bunch of guys. And then, of course, the guys that, you know, leave Japan.
Right.
A whole bunch of them leave Japan via Texas.
Tony Barnett.
Tony Barnett, Chris Martin this year. We've had some Japanese guys, a fairly large number of Japanese guys go through Texas on the way out of Japan. And it's like, yeah, it's almost like maybe they should get like a little NPV patch or something.
Right. You know? Right. They should be wearing it on there. And of course they've got, CJ Nitkowski, who used to pitch with the SoftBank Hawks. They got him in their booth. So yeah, they've got a pipeline. Yeah. There's a pipeline going there. Obviously we've got to either, find out where it's connected, or just get to the exit and entrance areas and just wait there. So we know, you know, we can just start naming these guys before it happens.
Yeah. So like, I don't know, like we're trying to capture cosmic events at the, you know, the event horizon, the Texas Rangers event horizon or something. So yeah, where the Texas Rangers and NPB, you know, where their spheres merge or something.
Right.
So yeah, it is kind of interesting. And I did, as most of you know, I've been on this kick about the mounds and such for about the last 5 months. And that was an interesting explanation of how it works. And I do remember people, you know, and we've talked about the two-seam fastball quite a bit in the last few months. And I remember, you know, Hiroki Kuroda is a great example. He didn't throw a two-seam fastball until he went to the majors, and then it became his number one pitch. And mm-hmm. then he came back and he had kind of a crisis because the ball doesn't allow it to move as much. You don't get as much horizontal run on a two-seam fastball in Japan,
right?
Because of the ball. And you don't get... And you're not going to get as much drop. Well, I think you will in some parks where the mound is a little harder and higher. I'm guessing Mazda and Sapporo Dome will do fine. I'm guessing the Eagles do well because Mima throws a decent one. But the problem is when you go to the other mounds, you're kind of out of luck.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of have to adjust, and his adjustment so far was, which was interesting. So what do you do? And you don't throw it, stop throwing it completely, but you sort of, you know, you maybe don't throw it, against right-handers or something.
Right.
So I don't know what his adjustments are going to be, but he's kind of learning those. So yeah, that was the interest. Those were the interesting things for me. And, you know, looking forward to, you know, really getting into the skills issue with all these pitchers. And I thought that was, you know, and, you know, and asking people, is this really going to make me a better pitcher? And of course, nothing's going to make you something you don't want to be.
Right.
You know, we're old enough to know that, you know, you can't change people, but if people want to change, there's a whole mess of different good things that can happen. So, and I think we'll get onto that subject a little later in the show. But yeah, it was really fun to talk to the guy, and he's a very charming, unassuming guy, and it was a real pleasure.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to him. I mean, he had a tough game the other day against SoftBank. Mm-hmm. They lost. They ended up losing 3-0. He was pitching at Fukuoka, whatever you want to call it, Dome. And he pitched fairly well, gave up Yuki Yanagita's first home run. But, I mean, you know, it's hard. He pitches a complete game and they don't score. Mm-hmm. And he's saddled with a loss, but it's a really high quality start. I'm thinking about grading out the quality starts, like an A quality start and a B quality start and C. And I'm working on a system here still. It's really hard to come up with if you want to include strikeouts and walks and hits and all that stuff, because the quality start is basically about the runs.
Yes, about earned runs. I mean, you could allow 10 runs in 6 innings, and if only 3 were earned, you got a quality start.
Right.
But which is kind of weird. But, you know, I don't mind. I like the quality start because I know there are people who say, wow, how can you allow, you know, 4.5 runs a game and be making quality starts? But that's like saying, you know, the win is even worse and saves are pretty bad. So, yeah. You know, get a grip.
Right, right. But Nick's ERA is, you know, close to 2, just a little bit under 2, and he's pitching really well. And I heard one of the announcers say, you know, this guy reminds me of his Japanese pitcher because he has a repertoire of pitches he can go to in different situations. He doesn't really rely on one particular thing. I like the cutter. I really like his cutter. And obviously, we don't know what these foreign pitchers and these imports are going to do when they get here. We've got guys who are major league pitchers, like Dylan G with the Dragons, who hasn't won a game yet, right? And but he has pitched fairly well. He's pitched okay. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Nick, who he's 1-2, and he could easily be 3-0. You know, so just interesting. And so I guess you want to transition into talking about the Fighters.
I kind of do.
Okay, well, let's, you know, they really helped the Lions get off to their strong start by by allowing a sweep at home in the opening series. And then they went on a little streak of their own and won 5 straight and swept the Rakuten Eagles on the road. And yeah, we tried to piece together that rotation early on, and and it was just murky. And I joked that we were gonna see Yuki Saito. I just didn't think it was gonna be this early in the season. Did you notice the other day Yuki Saito had a no hitter going and he got yanked? Did you notice that?
Well, they're not really no hitters for him. You have to understand expectations for him are different after things, you know, after considering his history.
Yeah, it was April.
You know, if I had a no hitter going through three innings, you know, people wouldn't expect it. People wouldn't expect me to have a no hitter past the first batter.
Well, I'm just saying he hadn't given up a hit, but he was in the fourth inning, and this was April 7th at Tokyo Dome, and there were 2 outs in the fourth inning, and he was just throwing the ball everywhere. He had walked 6 guys. He had plunked. Right. He plunked 2 guys, and they were winning 6-1 at the time. And they're just like, no, we've seen enough. And I'm like, you've seen enough today. We've seen enough for years. Stop it with this guy.
I know this is, you know, the manager, and I've harped on this quite a bit because there's another guy he's famous for. It's Hideki Kuriyama. He's a former university. He worked as a university professor at the same time he was after he retired, and he was doing his analyst gig in the media, and he taught classes, and he's one of these guys who really is, he gets an idea. Sometimes it's not a great idea, but he's almost sure he's right, and he's just going to beat everybody over the head with it. Now, I think
I'd like to beat him over the head with this.
And he's... And, you know, the pitching coach, Masato Yoshi, actually quit the Fighters because he hasn't done anything on the farm team to make him worth coming bringing up. And why do you got to keep using him? And he said afterwards, and I'm sure this doesn't get repeated a lot now that he's been back with the Fighters for a couple of years. You know, I was happy to get out of town with a manager who was less interested in winning than he was in his personal theories.
Right.
Well, you know, the reason, of course, I'll tell you what, if you had to trade one Yuki Saito for one Shohei Ohtani, I think you're probably coming out on the right side. Because the whole Shohei Ohtani two-way player thing was Kuriyama's idea, so... You know, he gets credit for that, but you know, he's also got to take credit for Yuki Saito, if credit's the word.
Credit. Yeah. So, like I said, we were trying to piece together a rotation for them, and it didn't include, at least in my mind, it didn't include Toru Murata, who's a guy who was with the Giants, who went to the States and then came back. And you know, he has pitched okay for them. I mean, he's been usable. In one game, he was outstanding. So, and for me, obviously, we didn't know what Martinez was going to do. So those are two boosts to the rotation. I think for me, we're kind of off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, another guy who's impressed, at least early on with the bat, is Yushi Shimizu, the catcher. Second round pick in 2014 for them.
A
catcher who's got 3 home runs and 25 or so at bats already, and he's catching pretty well. And then you've got Kensuke Kondo, who looks great as long as he can stay healthy. I saw that Jason, I didn't read it all, I just read some of it, but Jason Koskrie of the Japan Times had a story about him.
A wonderful story, yeah.
Yeah, possibly hitting 400, and that he probably might have done it before if it wasn't for those meddling injuries. And he's being a real good presence in the lineup. And then Oswaldo Arcia, I know he got hit by a pitch and he might miss some time here, but he looked like he was going to be a little bit more usable than maybe we first imagined. But it's so hard. Like, you know, we've got Willian Rosario who with the Tigers, who looked really good in the spring and then he's been pretty much mediocre since.
Well, he started okay. He had a couple of good games, and then
He pretty much been mediocre. But anyway, getting back to the rotation, we had Kyohei Arihara, who was their top pick a couple 3 years ago, and he finally, you know, he had shoulder issues, and so he's back in the rotation, making his first start of the season on Saturday, and he goes 8 innings, only allows a run. I mean, it is Oryx. And you know, they can score, so I mean, it's not like they're the worst team in the world, but he allowed only a home run, a Chris Marrero home run in the 8th inning, and then no walks, 9 strikeouts to beat the Buffaloes in the 2-1. And I'm trying to think back, you know, I wasn't really impressed with Arihara the first time I saw him, but I thought, man, this has to be probably the best start of his career. Stats wise, I mean, you know, just the one run and then 9 strikeouts and no walks. And then now
he's been a slow starter. I mean, he's had two, you know, he had his rookie of the year season, which he was okay the second half, and he was absolute garbage the first half. And then the second year he came back and he had that year 2016 where he was really, he didn't start well. I think he also was off to a slow start. I don't remember if it was an injury or not. But then he came back in the middle of the season, and he was, you know, he was one of the reasons that they didn't need Ohtani to pitch, because we're good without you, dude. Just hit.
Yeah, right. So, and then now Yuki Uwasawa, he's coming off a season that was plagued by injuries, and he's healthy and he looks effective. So it's just a different dynamic that's going on out there. I know that. Obviously, you lose a guy like Ohtani, and it looks like, you know, he might impact. But I saw someone else tweet, well, yeah, but Ohtani was so plagued with injuries last year, he really wasn't around, and they finished last. And I'm like, yeah, so he wasn't there.
They could have finished last without him.
I was going to say, he wasn't there, and they finished last. So, you know, what are the expectations? But I like what they're doing. They look good early, but I'm just wondering how sustainable the whole situation is. Sometimes they look like they're not going to score unless they hit a home run, that they can't score. They can't score. And that looks like an issue. And for all the good that the team has done, it's still 7-6 as we sit today going into games. So it's not like, you know, they're tearing the cover off the ball and setting the world on fire, but the fighters are a little bit better than I expected them to be early on, but it's so early. There's only one team that's really looking great, and that's Cebu.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to go. I haven't had much chance to talk about the fighters yet. So I think one of the nice, well, in addition to Shimizu, the catcher, who I think he had about 300 plate appearances before the start of the season, and he had one home run, and he had 3 in a span of 4 or 5 games.
And did you see them? Did you get a look at them?
I did not.
A couple of them were opposite field jobs, and obviously at Tokyo Dome, where you don't have to you don't have to get it all to get it out. But still, opposite field home runs, they count. Even at Tokyo Dome. And yeah, he looked good with that swing, but I don't know that that's going to play well at Sapporo Dome or Seibu or some of the other locations.
Well, yeah, but better, you know, better nothing that, you know, something than nothing. And the other thing is Naoya Ishikawa.
Uh-huh.
Yes. He's a 21-year-old. He was there... their fourth draft pick in 2014. And he's been, you know, he's been working on these pitches, and I think he's finally kind of figured out his splitter. And I haven't seen him pitch, and I've only heard about him, but he's, you know, it was, Michael Tonkin was going to apparently look like he was going to be the closer. And now they got Ishikawa going in there. Okay, move over, bud. So, you know, a lot of positive things, but I'll have to. Now, again, I haven't watched the fight. I haven't been to a fighter's game, and I haven't really. I think I've watched one full game on TV.
Right.
And I'm not a big fan of what I've seen so far, other than a few individual performances. But I will tell you, I have a luck index.
Lucky index. What does it say the forecast for my luck today?
You're not on it. You're off the radar. No, it only tries to, you know, basically it's an effort to put the number of runs teams are scoring,
right,
and allowing,
mm-hmm,
in context of their offensive and defensive events. So the things that happen, you know, on the field of play, and basically how many runs they've benefited. And here's the interesting thing is the fighters actually
they're being outscored, yeah.
Yeah, they are, but they've been very unlucky in that respect. They've been unlucky in that respect in that they could easily have scored a lot more runs. You know, they've had this thing about not getting the big hit.
Mm-hmm.
Or they've been giving up the big hit, and I haven't seen the quality. I mean, you know, a lot depends on actually how the ball is, you know, the balls that are pitched and hit, how they're hit is really the really important thing.
Right.
But the end result has been they've had a lot of unusually poor results in that respect. So while their runs scored and runs allowed are not very pretty, they look like a team that actually could be quite a bit better in that respect. So they're sort of like the glass is both half empty and half full for them.
All right, so it's a half a glass.
It's sort of a wash. So what you're seeing is, I think, more or less what you expect to see, what you might expect to see from the fighters this year. Not a great team, but not a disaster waiting to happen either.
Right, right. Yeah, and I like what Brandon Laird, I mean, he's having a strong start, and you know, I admit I might have underestimated the fighters, but I still think the Pacific League is a tough place to get wins as well. And when you've got a team like the Eagles that's 3-10, and you've got a team like Lotte that's 7-5, I think that shows, because I think, you know, the talent levels on all these teams is pretty equal, pretty close. So you know, if you get something that you get the luck factor going in the wrong way, like the Eagles have been doing, you end up 7 games under .500 instantly. So yeah, the Lions look good. They're 9 games over .500 as we go into games today. You know, they had the winning streak 8 to start the season, and the last time they had done that was 1991, and that was a championship year and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I put up a poll last weekend. I said, when do you think the Eagles or the Lions are going to lose that first game of the season? And most of the people picked, I think 60% picked, of the 20 people who predicted, who answered the poll. It was only 20, but thank you very much for answering.
You're welcome.
And Ayumu Ishikawa.
Vote early and vote often.
Yes, I'll put up more polls. Maybe we'll do it that way. The more polls you get put up, the more people who respond to them. Anyway, Ayumu Ishikawa of Lotte helped the Marines stop that winning streak with a 5-2 win on Tuesday at Zozo. And then the Lions lost the next game, and then again they started winning again. So another team I might have underestimated, but it's still early. I just, you know, that rotation still, to me, we've gone through it. I'm not sure it holds up over an entire season, but
no, I don't think so either. But I don't see any teams that I look in. So, boy, that looks like a lock solid rotation. I just don't see that in NBB this year. I do,
and we'll get to it later in the show. I actually do see that rotation. So we'll get to it.
Oh, do you?
I do. Okay. I've seen the light. Yes, but we'll have to wait until we get to that.
You're scaring me. Okay. Oh, okay. I see. You've got the switch on. Okay.
Right, but yeah, so, that trade for Daiki Inokita, who came over from the Tigers, I didn't think was going to be anything in particular, and he started on Thursday against the Marines, and he started off wobbly, and I thought, yeah, this is what happens when you get a guy from an inferior league pitching in a better league against a quality team, or a team that's having a quality start. And he ends up winning the game 6-3, and you know, he pitched really well. I couldn't believe it, but I mean, 6 innings, 5 hits, a walk, 2 strikeouts. That was a great effort for a guy like that, I thought. And it was his first win as a starter in NPB in 4 years. June of 2014 was the last time he had done it as a starter. So I thought it was real quality, really showing that he might have some, again, it comes against a team I didn't have high expectations for, so I want to see him pitch against the better teams. But I thought it was a good start for him.
Yeah, well, I like what the Lions have done. And you know me, I'm big on defense and the value of that, because it's often overlooked. It's overlooked in Japan, where, you know, there's one of my favorite things. I don't know if I mentioned this before. If you ever go to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Japan, they have this wonderful artwork around the door of all these baseball players and in different action poses.
Right.
There's about 25 players. I forget the actual number here. But the interesting thing is it's a microcosm. What the players are doing is a microcosm of how Japanese baseball is reported and thought about in the media. Okay, there's about 26 individual baseball players. About 18 of them are hitters, are swinging a bat.
Right.
Okay, there's 6 guys who are pitching.
Mm-hmm.
There's one guy who's catching and one guy who's running the bases. There's not a single guy who isn't a pitcher or a catcher. The one catcher who has a glove on fielding the ball.
Right.
People just completely ignore it. And it's it's something that is so fundamental to winning. I mean, the coaches don't ignore it. The teams don't ignore it.
And you don't get on the field if you can't play defense. And a lot of organizations.
Not in Japan. I did a story for upcoming Slugger magazine, and they asked me, you know, talk to a bunch of major league scouts and see what they say. And I heard some very interesting things. And one of them was every established catcher in NPB, in terms of his catching skills and throwing and his throwing skills, could play every day in the majors.
Wow.
Now, I'm not talking about handling pitchers, he said, and I'm not talking about batting. But in terms of, you know, how they play the other side of the defense,
right,
is outstanding. So that was that. And the other thing is, anyways, to make the point, not just sit here and try to sound educated.
Okay.
I'm kind of interested in things like, you know, how do teams keep runners off base, and the best team, the worst. The lowest opposition average on balls in play belongs to the Cebu Lions.
Huh.
So if you put the ball in play, you have a .246 average against the Lions. That excludes home runs, of course. But and it goes to another one. Yeah, well, I mean, that's
out of play. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. To be precise, in 99 times out of 100, yes. Okay, so, and then when it comes to actually... the irony is that the Lions lead the league in errors. So when it comes to actually preventing base runners, the percentage of base runners, the Hawks are just a little bit better, but the Lions are really, really good. So that's a huge thing, just to be able to keep. And one of the other things you can do is keep teams from taking free bases. And if you count stolen bases, caught stealing attempts, and times picked off, if you're on first base and you're trying to, you're thinking about second, you probably shouldn't think too hard about the Lions. So even with Tomoya Mori, and I haven't checked his individual numbers, even with Tomoya Mori catching, the Lions have thrown out essentially 42% of the people who've put themselves in jeopardy on the bases.
Yeah. Wow.
So, which is number one in NPB. So those are two things.
Early on, people, yes.
And they've also done well in double plays. So you don't let runners on. You throw out guys who try to steal. And then you get extra outs in double plays. So you're going to win a lot of games if that's what you're doing. So this sounds very much like my – I don't want to pat myself on the back because it's pretty ugly. But – you know, my thoughts about the Cebu Lions and the Hiroshima Carp were, A, score a lot of runs.
Right.
Play really, really good defense. And then let the pitchers, you know, keep the ball in play.
Right.
And take things from there. And so far, that formula is working, as it did last year.
And the other thing about the Lions is they're leading NPB right now in steals. And I remember scoffing at, during the PL prediction show, at the idea, at the notion, well. But Shuta Tonosaki has 6 stolen bases to lead the way, as we're talking now. And then you've got other guys like Yuji Kaneko, he's got 4. And you see Shogo Akiyama on the list. And then you scroll down and you see Tomoya Mori with 2. And so, it's not like they are the fastest or swiftest team out there, but obviously they have a key in getting that next base with Tsuji as the manager, and it looks like and the coaching staff, and it looks like they're picking their spots right, and they're having a lot of success in that area. So
yeah, and the other thing is, of course, they stole 17 bases through Saturday, and they're 17-2. They've had 2 runners thrown out. I probably should see how many guys they've had picked off here. Just a second. Actually, none so far. So they're pretty good in that respect. And the other thing is the Lions, despite having Tsuji, who was, if you remember the golden age of the Cebu Lions, mid-80s to mid-90s, when they just loved to bunt. And the Lions, although they've done very well getting runners on base, they're not a bunting team.
No, yeah. And it's nice. It's refreshing, isn't it?
It is. So the Marines, for example, the Marines have bunted 15 times and the Lions 7. But the other side of that is, if you can steal and you can hit for power, why bother?
Exactly.
I mean, that's certainly – and if you're the Marines and you don't hit for power, well, then – why not?
Yeah, and the other kid I like who's coming around for them is my favorite name among Japanese players in NPB, and that's Shinsaburo Tawata. And again, another guy who threw perhaps his best game as a pro. He threw a complete game against the Eagles in a 5-1 win. That was yesterday on Saturday.
Yep.
And just really strong effort from him the whole way. And 4 hits, 5 strikeouts, and a walk. Not dominating, but he was really, really sharp. And if they get the pitching, again, I'm not sure how long, you know, what the injuries might do, how long things hold up for them, or the back half of that rotation. But you said it, you called it, that this offense could really churn out some runs. And if they get the pitching, yeah, that they could be really dangerous. And
The thing for me is, can Tomoya Mori catch? And this is, and talked about this before, but this is a guy who's gone from being, he wants to catch like he did in high school. Okay, well, all right. So it was like last year in spring training, fall camp in 2016, they were like humoring him.
Yeah, you can go sit with the big boys, but don't get cozy.
Yeah, it was exactly like people expected to see with Shohei Ohtani in the Angels camp. Oh, isn't that cute? He's got a bat.
Take a picture. You know? Take a picture for posterity.
Sorry, before a grown up takes it away from him.
Hashtag hi.
So it was kind of like that, and you know, and he had. The thing is, when he came up, of course, he was drafted as a catcher. He had been Shintaro Fujinami's catcher in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, not a big guy. He's a smallish guy, but he's a power hitting, a very small, muscular guy. And he's a good hitter. And he had a lot of passed balls when he was a first year player, a lot in the minors, a lot in the first team. And that was pretty much the end of his catching career. And then he said, hey, I want to catch. And they said, okay, well, do it on the minors. You know, do it where you're not going to hurt anybody. And
go stand over there and catch this. Go catch a cold.
They did not say that. But they did. And here's the thing is, I thought they were just humoring him. And what they did was they were working with him. They thought, well, if you really want to do it, let's get it on. Let's do it. And as a result of his work and their patience and his, I think, realization that once Hotaka Yamakawa came up, he was going to be out of a job. he is now catching frequently for the Lions, where he is by far the best hitting catcher in Japan. And he is apparently adequately defensively. So, good on you, man.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. I mean, when you've got Gingiro Sumitani behind you, and we know he's a great defensive catcher, and he can't get on the field, then that says something about the
way it does. And I like Sumitani. I think he's. I didn't know him when he was young. When he was a young kid, but I like him now, and I love talking to him, and I can hear him. You know, him saying, of course, I want to be the number one catcher always, but this is not about me.
Right, right.
And I think he's getting a huge boost from Sumitani. Of course, he's probably happy that Justin Howe doesn't have to catch every day.
Right, right. So let's make a four-seam transition and move on to the Central League. And surprises. Let's get to this rotation. I think I want to get to that right away before I forget. There's a rotation out there I think is doing well. The team is 8-5, but I think the rotation is going to get better. You have any idea who I'm talking about?
Got to be DNA based. Or...
Exactly. They got guys like Joe Whelan. They've got Shota Imanaga. And
those are guys who aren't even here.
Who aren't yet? Yeah, but they're expected back fairly soon.
Okay.
So, and there's one more, and Haruhiro Hamaguchi. Those are three guys who, when they are ready to go, they are in the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen the Bay Stars go through guys like Satoshi Iizuka. You've got Katsuki Azuma, who pitched really well. And then you've got Shingo Hirata.
Edison Barrios, the middle reliever from the SoftBank Hawks.
Who was in Indy Ball a couple years ago or even last year.
Yeah.
And he's back up. And they've got
Masaya Kyoyama.
Yeah. So these guys, and they've done a great job. And they're 8-5. They won 7 straight games going into the day. That's their longest winning streak in 13 seasons. And they're going to get better. And I think once those three guys come back, they've got a great problem, which is who do they – I mean, obviously the rookies, probably Hirata stays down in the minors, maybe Kyoyama, who knows? I don't know, but they don't have enough days in the week to get these guys out there. They've got I think what we can say, a loaded rotation. And the Bay Stars, if they get this kind of pitching, if they get quality pitching – They could start to run away from teams in the Central League, in my opinion.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see it happening, but it's possible. I mean, it's likely if they get all these guys back and they pitch at a quality level.
I'll agree. I'll go with that, and I think the odds of that could happen. I don't see the Bay Stars. I see the Bay Stars on my luck. They score really high on my luck index.
Okay.
And, okay, which means I'm not trusting the results I see.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go in that direction.
Well, I didn't. I mean, their runs scored, runs allowed is also not too pretty. So I like what Alex Ramirez does. I like there are things I do like about the Bay Stars. The defense is not selling me this year yet. Still early. We'll see. The base running is good, which is something good because last year the base running was pretty bad. I mean, and not bad in the sense that they didn't do the right things, but they did. I shouldn't say the base running, but the base stealing was pretty ugly. They had a leadoff guy who you just didn't want. You know, Michael Westbay touched on this, and we did a little chorus. keep that guy. The guy who really shouldn't be stealing at all, but you know he's fast and he did steal a big base in the Japan series that helped them stretch the series out. But that was one game, and okay, but there are things about the Bay Stars. Their defense, although not preventing singles, they've been very fairly good in preventing extra base hits. They have been hitting for power. They're not getting on base. They're not preventing opposing teams from getting on base, but they're doing the other things. You know, they're doing the keeping teams from advancing runners via extra bases, and while they are doing well in the stolen bases, and they're doing well in preventing stolen bases, and their pitching has been good enough with that formula. So it's not, when I look at the Cebu Lions and I go, wow, solid, wow, solid, wow, solid. Okay, the pitching needs help. I look at the Bay Stars and I say, well, the pitching could be better.
Mm-hmm. Which it's going to be.
Yeah, I think it will get better. How much better is a good question, because they're pretty good for what they've got now. I'm not certain if the new guys are going to be reliably better, much better, a step above, and certainly more reliable. That's not making any sense. But what I'm saying is they have a little higher established value, the guys
right.
coming back.
Right.
And so I think the guys now are pitching over their heads, and if the guys come back, pitch about what they expected, they'll maintain about where they are now.
Well, I don't know about pitching over their heads. They're just new, and I think teams don't really know how to.
Well, that's true.
What they're doing. So I think part of that is the reason. But you talked about.
If you have to use Edwin Escobar as a starter, that's probably a sign that you're really clutching at straws because he's really a two pitch guy. In which I think they've only tried that once. But so I think this is more luck and desperation than, you know, all these guys who we didn't expect to be good are actually good. So,
okay, well,
so, okay, that's my interpretation of it. So my thinking is, let's say the pitching now is 500 quality pitching. Let's say if everything, all else being equal, this is a team, maybe the guys nobody's heard of, they've been throwing out there, have been pitching 500 ball.
Right.
And the other guys are better. So I think the other guys will be better, but I don't see it as being a huge upswing. I just don't predict players to be so much better, but I think it is possible.
Okay.
I don't see it as likely.
All right. So okay, you touched on Masayuki Kuwahara, but you didn't name him. So I'm going to name him. And this is the guy who Michael Westbay also doesn't want trying to steal bases, but, and we got him. I remember in the offseason, I think we got a question from Max in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and he asked about Tomo Otozaki and said, can he possibly get more playing time? And we said he was going to have to beat out somebody in the outfield. Well, little did we know this rookie named Kazuki Kamisato was going to step into the spotlight, and he has no problem stealing bases. He's tied for the league lead with 7. I think he was thrown out yesterday, and that was the first time he was caught stealing, and then yesterday being Saturday. So obviously, if he hits at all, and if he can play, it seemed like he was okay in the outfield. you know, Kuwahara is going to have his challenges. Otozaki had got a couple starts recently, so they're mixing it up, and I like what Alex is doing. And you talked about the focus on the rotation and the pitchers and all that, but obviously he's worried about everybody, and he's giving guys like Hiroki, Mine more playing time. And Mine came through with a two-run double the other day, and with a big hit the other day, and we remember him from getting a big hit in the CLCS versus the Giants. Mm-hmm. I think
last year even he had a big postseason. He was there pretty much their number one guy almost. I mean, he was up there playing.
I like with the Bay Stars start how they're starting out, and I like what I can maybe foresee with that rotation in the second half. If you're talking about a rotation that's stacked like that, where you've got 7 or 8 guys who could potentially get starts, especially when you have those stretches of like 9-10 games in a row where they don't get the Monday off. They bring one of these guys up from the farm team and throw them out there.
The Bay Stars are, and it's not just the pitching. The Bay Stars are noticeable for what they aren't. And who ain't there? Takayuki Kajitani.
Kajitani, yeah, one of my favorite players in Japan.
And not playing because
he's always injured.
Exactly. And, you know, Yoshitomo Tsutsugo did not get off to a very good start. He's hitting, you know, he's back, not like last year when, you know, expected him to hit 40 home runs, and he didn't, you know, he didn't hit 10 until probably the end of May.
Well, last year it was, what was it, WBC syndrome or something that was keeping him. And then this year, I forgot about that one. Yeah, okay. There was no reason for him to be having such a slow start. But, I mean, maybe he just gets off to slow starts sometimes. I mean, it happens. Yeah. It happens, so.
Well, he likes to make seasonal adjustments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in 2016, when he had his huge year, he started the season well. He wasn't hitting for a huge amount of power, but he was hitting for average. And then he changed where he was looking to hit the ball. He sort of refined a new contact point. And I think every year he comes out and says, well, I want to do this a little better. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
Last year completely did not. His whole first half of the season was pretty much wasted. And the second half was normal. And so I think he's got that Shohei Ohtani thing going on where he's always, you know, he's constantly making in-season adjustments, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Right. I tell you what, the biggest adjustment that I didn't expect to see, and I really didn't expect a lot of play out of this guy, but we heard Alex say he was going to use him, and then he has been, and that's Yamato Maeda, who's playing at shortstop, which I think is his best position defensively. And if it's not an outfield position, but I think shortstop is probably one of his best positions.
Well, I think second base is his best, but then
we've got a larger body of work there. But I don't think he was able to play. He didn't get a lot of chance to play short when he was with the Tigers because of the future Hall of Famer, Takashi Toritani. So I don't think he had a chance to put up a big body of work. So we've seen a lot of great work from him at second. We just haven't seen it at short. But he made a pretty nice play yesterday as well. But so having him, and then they just pushed Toshihiko Kuramoto over to second base, and I thought, well, how's that going to work? But he seems to have, you know, figured out the difference in the throws, and he looks decent out there, and that was a problem. They've had guys that, you know, Takehiro Ishikawa was in and out of the lineup at second base and wasn't really playing a great second base, and Tatsuhiro Shibata was at second and was in and out of the lineup and didn't seem to be, I mean, defensively was really good, didn't seem to be consistent at the plate. So this could be something good. I really like what I'm seeing with the Bay Stars right now. It's early.
Yeah, I think I think it's it's going to 16th of April. I think we can just assume that people understand it's early, and what we see from the Bay Stars is there's a lot of encouraging things. This is a team that could be quite a bit better, and again, I don't expect them to be, but I wouldn't rule that out. I don't see them standing at the edge of the cliff, going to get worse because everything's going to go wrong.
Right. All right. I did want to mention that the Dragons were playing well, and that this Zolo Almonte has really added some pop and some clutchness to their lineup, but they're the only guys who seem to be hitting consistently. And they're still scoring runs, so if they get it together, maybe they can make a push. But their rotation has some holes in it. We did see Kazuki Yoshimi come back and throw a fairly decent game the other day, and they ended up sweeping
the Swallows.
But
that's what he does. He does. He, you know, he's going to come and pitch about once or twice a month and pitch pretty well, and, you know, that's what he does. So the other thing I would mention is the Yakult Swallows, and since we're on sort of the favorite team thing here, mm-hmm. for not I think for any purpose, is that they're leading. They're the best team in Japan at getting runners on base, which is, one of the things you need to do, and they've been doing it. So that's not something doing things well. Their defense is better so far this year than it was a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or it was in 2016. So it's like, yeah, good. A managing change has kickstarted that a little bit. So I like it. I think they have a chance to be better. If the defense is, you know, if your guys are catching balls and you know they're going to catch balls that they're supposed to,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to turn double plays and they're going to help you out in lots of little ways, it's so much easier. And then you know, you're getting a bunch of guys on base. It's so much easier to be a pitcher.
Yes.
When everything isn't on your shoulders, when the true outcomes are life and death.
Yeah.
So but that's all I had to say about the Swallows.
Yeah, they are impressive. I have to say that they've been doing a lot better than I expected, but of course they can't be they've got quality players at a lot of positions, and you know my affinity for Tetsuto Yamada, and to see him swinging the way he has been and stealing bases and getting on base and just wreaking havoc has just really been fun for me, and I'm not a Swallows fan, so.
He's certainly doing that. I mean, he's not hitting for average, but he's drawing a zillion walks.
Right.
And you know, that's good, and Aoki has helped them quite a bit. I mean, he's getting on base 340, which is probably a little lower than I expected. But the other thing about the Central League, just before I leave it, and I mentioned the Hiroshima Carp, and they're not going to be any trouble, and they're going to be fine. They're the other team that's been really good at preventing, keeping runners from getting on base in the Central League. But the one thing that surprised the heck out of me was the Yomiuri Giants. Their defense has really struggled. And I don't see they've been so good. I mean, it's I'm not going to give it away by saying it's the middle of April, but it's a concern that the defense just is not working this year.
Yeah,
and they're not throwing out runners, and they're getting on base a lot, and so that's a concern. And I've
just seen what I've seen. I mean, I saw Chono miss a ball in center. I've seen guys just not field the ball at their positions. Sometimes just the ball goes right through them, even Hayato Sakamoto at short. So I've seen what you're talking about, but I think I chalked it up to some youth. They've also got Alex Guerrero out there. Actually, he's making plays. He's catching
the ball. I know. What's up with that?
But
Hey, they didn't, you know, it's like the coaches are going, hey, they didn't say you could. Yeah. You know what to do with that glove?
I think that's gonna happen with youth. One more note on Yamada Tetsuto. I know he got hit. I remember when he got hit by a pitch in, I believe it was 2016, he just hadn't seen right. Yeah, hadn't seen right since then. And I'm just noticing that his swing seems to be back from the 2015-2016 season. It just seems back.
Well, I'll tell you what people told me. And then I pieced it together through some very laborious work with some of the data I have access to, is that, first of all, yes, his swing is back, but one of the things was that when he first came up, he exploited the fact that, particularly in the Central League, a lot of pitchers don't work inside. And we're seeing it more and more in the Pacific League, but still less so in the Central League. And, you know, he was looking for pitches on the inside part of the plate.
Okay.
And not having to be worried about pushed off the plate until he got hit. And then he seemed to get a little gun shy. and where he was never really good at hitting inside pitches. He's just become, that was his sort of his weak spot, was that part right on the edge of the plate. I mean, he could do it, but he could do it well enough, but now it's been a disaster for him the last year and a half. And I haven't looked to see how well he's done that with done this year, but if he's hitting 250, that's a start.
All right.
Because I don't think anybody's cutting him any slack. I don't think anybody's going to say, well, we got him out. We've been getting him out for 2 years by throwing him inside and then going outside and watching him dive, you know, try to dive and hit those pitches. I don't think anybody's thinking, well, let's just give it up. Let's get, you know, cut him some slack and throw him some fat ones.
Yeah. And just one more note. I don't think anybody's cutting Randy Messenger any slack because he got thrown out of a game the other day and, on a borderline pitch. And I don't know if it was a strike or a ball. It was close enough to go either way. I'm not sure. But he got thrown out and there were some fireworks. And I think all he said was that was a blanking strike and he got the gate. So they ended up dropping the game, but, you know, it happens. These guys, it was no Matt Merton type explosion. So we love you, Matt. We love you, Matt.
We do.
All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. The first one comes from Eric Peters, and it's a high heat question. He said, what are some of your favorite baseball books, Japanese baseball focused or otherwise? Always curious to hear from baseball writers about what they would recommend. Hashtag high heat.
I'm going to stick with Japanese related because if it was all baseball related, it would take too long. And okay. I'm going to try to be brief. My three favorite books about Japanese baseball are number one, Sadaharu O, A Zen Way of Baseball, his autobiography. It's badly in need of updating. It's a wonderful, wonderful work of translation. It's a superb book. If you want to know about Sadaharu O, it's really him. I believe it's out of print now, but it's a wonderful book if you can find it. Number two is The Meaning of Ichiro by Bob Whiting. Definitely must read. I think the story of how the Giants became. I should say not how the Giants became the Giants, but how the Giants discovered themselves after the war and reinvented themselves as the Yomiuri Giants is quite interesting. A few other things. And the other one is sort of an academic work, but it explains a lot of things about how Japanese baseball became Japanese baseball, and that's Trans-Pacific Field of Dreams by Sayuri Guthrie Shimizu.
Okay. All right. For me, I have to be honest, I haven't read many books recently of any kind. The last time I had a book in my hand, it was Shigekazu Mori. He's now the manager of the Dragons, but at the time he was the pitching coach of the Dragons, and he had written a book in Japanese about just about preparation. I don't even remember the title. I'm looking for it here in my little office as I speak, but I can't find it. And that was the last time I had a book in my hands, and I have to say that was like 7 years ago or something. And I'm trying to write two books. I got two books not halfway written. One's more than halfway written, and the other one is a great idea that's partially written. I've got too much going on now with the wife and the kids and all this stuff, but I tell you, the one book I really want to read is Smart Baseball by Keith Law, because I love Keith Law. Everything I hear him say, every utterance is just, it's like gold to me. And
wow.
He comes on the one podcast that I listen to about baseball, which is Baseball Tonight or Baseball Today. I can't remember. They've renamed it, but the Buster Olney podcast, I think. Let me look it up here so I get the title right on that. Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney. So Keith Law comes on there, and he actually has his own podcast. Keith Law does, but I don't have enough time to listen to that as well. So Smart Baseball is probably the one I want to read next. And then anything that's a biography or autobiography, I would pick up in a moment. So, and I know that Brad Eldred wrote a book. It's in Japanese, and I actually was talking to him about it recently. And he's got a book out, so I wanna pick that up and give that a peruse. So, but right now, yeah, no time for books. I'm trying to produce my own, so that's basically where I went those. All right, the next question is from Glenn in Tokyo, and he says, as a Tigers fan, so he lets the cat out of the bag. He's been writing letters and sending us questions for years, and there was at one point I thought he was a Giants fan, but he is a Tigers fan. So he says, as a Tigers fan, I have high hopes for Rosario, but as he plummets toward the Mendoza line, I wonder how much time you think he will be given by the Tigers. Past hopes have included Eric Campbell, and he gives some stats about him and talks about the fact that a lot of the guys don't get time. He says, apart from the Fighters, Brandon Laird, which teams have you seen actually put time and effort into helping new foreign talent adjust? You want to go first?
Well, time is probably the biggest thing. I think all the teams are willing to put in the work with the players on the farm team or on the first team. But time is probably their, you know, willingness to stick with a guy on the first team. I have to give the Hiroshima Carp number one. I think the Fighters are getting there. But the Fighters are, you know, and I've mentioned Hideki Kuriyama. He's a little bit, you know, he was a professor, so maybe he was Dr. Jekyll. Because he's got this thing about, you know, as I said, he likes his big ideas. And I've talked about in the past how he would, you know, he said, oh, I had to take care of you've got to take extra care of your players. And when he says players, he meant Shohei Ohtani.
Right. players and without the S.
Exactly. And when you got to take care of your pitchers, he meant Yuki Saito. You know, so he was like, it was like cracked ribs. Get out there! What's wrong with you? I wish I were joking. And I do like him. He's one of my favorite managers, or one of my most infuriating managers. He alternates. That's the Dr. Jekyll routine label.
Yeah.
But yes, but he's been up and down in that respect. But with Brandon Laird, yes, and so I guess he'll include him. Oh, Shohei, okay. Brandon, okay. Okay, you other guys, back of the bus.
Right.
So he's had that, but the Fighters organization has been willing to do it, certainly, and so I give them credit. The Swallows organization, and particularly their current manager Jun Giogawa, was the guy who, you know, they got huge years out of Vladimir Ballantyn and Lastings Milledge and Tony Barnett, and these guys credited a manager who said, you just go out and you take care of your business and I'll take care of my business and we're going to do all right. And so I think that was not as much the Swallows as much as it was Jun Giogawa. But the Carp organization takes the cake because they basically, their plan is, we trust our scouts.
Right.
We trusted our scouts who brought you here, that you're a quality person and you're going to figure things out. We trust what you've done in the past, and we are going to do our best to take care of all the non-baseball stuff.
Right. Well, you know, I don't have an example that maybe mirrors or parallels Brandon Laird, because he spent all his time on the top team and he was barely hitting 200 and they just stuck with him. But the thing about Brandon was he was hitting for power when he did make contact. So he was getting the ball over the fence. He was producing in that respect. So I don't have the stats that Jim has, so I went back in my memory banks and I tried to remember some examples of teams that just stuck with players. And immediately the guy who came to mind was Frederick Cepeda, who hung around with the Giants for two seasons despite not hitting a lick at all. But they stuck with him and they left him on the farm team, and they would bring him up every once in a while to see if he could do what he was doing on the farm team on the top team. So that was one example. And then the other example, I think you nailed it, I thought, with the Hiroshima Carp, because we've seen Xavier Bautista, who's 26, and he was on the farm up and down last year, had a breakout period, but couldn't stay on the team. But they've kept him, and he's still with the club, and he's going to play at some point. So I think we're seeing a commitment to him. It's just not on the top team exclusively. Then you've got Alejandro Mejia, who, if you think about it, he was in the system last year and tore it up in the farm without getting a long look on the top team. So they're bringing him up, and he's getting a chance. But again, the chances right now aren't consistent. But perhaps he'll be able to get some time regularly when one of these Japanese guys starts to fall off a little bit. I think we're really quick to say that the Japanese teams don't give these imports a chance, and I think when you look at the at bats and see if they're making good, the teams like to look at the at bats and see if they're making good contact. They're not looking at exclusively looking at the production or the batting average. But if you're hitting ropes and just not like Jim has his luck factor, you're hitting some balls that could be considered hard line drives and could be hits to just at people, then they're going to give you a break. But if you're striking out all the time, I don't think you get a break. And there's one example, I think, Glenn, since you're a Tigers fan, that I thought you would remember, and that's the tale of Aaron Balderese, because he was a good player. And Jim was always telling me this is a really good player because he hit on the minor league team and they just didn't bring him up to play on the top team. And when they did, he hit. So he eventually got his chance because the Tigers were really patient with him and stuck with him.
They were patient and kept him on the minor league team. And
that's what I'm saying.
As soon as Akinobu Okada left the Tigers, he was out of a job.
Right.
And then he went to Oryx, where Okada was managing, and Okada said, "You know, I always liked you, and I don't have a guy playing ahead of you at shortstop now or third base. Yeah. So okay, just go do what you do."
Right. So I think that's the biggest example, because he's a guy who, you know, was in a system for a while before he actually got a chance. So I think you're tight. The answer to your question was there, but it's a good question. And I don't know why sometimes, I mean, obviously Gabe Kapler is the biggest example, I think, of a guy who had a really great spring or an impressive spring. Mm-hmm. And then once the flags went up or the gun sounded for the start of the season, he couldn't make contact. And when he did make contact, it was all soft. He didn't really even last a month. He's done better as a manager over the Phillies. He's going to last more than a month in that job. But that had a bad start too.
That already. I asked him about that, and he said, I had interviewed him because he had this great start, and I talked to him about it, and he said, "Yeah, I really want to learn from Japanese baseball and, you know, make better adjustments, you know, and go back and have a strong finish to my MLB career." And he said, I said, "Well," when I talked to him at the winter meetings, it was like, "Well, what was wrong with that plan?" And he says, "I think it was that I had one foot out the door to begin with. I was never focused on, I wanted to win, I wanted to be a better player, but I was never focused on being the best player I could for the Yomiuri Giants to win a pennant in Japan and be a player in Japanese baseball." He wanted to be kind of a major league player who learned from Japanese baseball, and he didn't quite take it. That was Gabe Kapler, who talks a lot about trees and holistic things, but that was Gabe.
Okay. All right. Well, you started off this segment about talking about time, and we've gone really long, so we're going to wrap it up here. We've got one more question, but we'll get to it next week. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.